welcome. My name is Gordon Reid, and I'm your host for the London Institute of Banking and Finance podcast for mortgage advisors. Today is all about income protection and its relevance and importance to mortgage advisors and their customers. And I am being joined by a fantastic panel of industry experts, all of whom appeared on previous LIBF podcasts, though for one, it's his first time on our mortgage podcast channel. So, without further ado, let me introduce this esteemed cohort, beginning with Carla Edwards, founder and principal of The Protection Parent. And for those of you who are interested in protection but don't yet follow Carla on at least one social media site, my advice is do something about that now. Carla, I believe congratulations are in order for the fairly rapid expansion of your business, even since you joined us earlier this year.
Yeah, it's been intense the last few months, to say the least. So thank you for that introduction. That was very nice.
Oh, absolutely great to have you join us again, Carla, especially as how busy you must be with your expanded team now.
Yeah, run to the ground.
Good for you. Next, let me welcome Andrew Wibberley, co-chair of the IPTF, the Income Protection Task Force. Andrew has worked for many years around life, critical illness and income protection insurance, including latterly in his corporate career at Fortis, now AIG Life, and Swiss Re, where he was the head of underwriting. For the last few years, however, Andrew has run his own consultancy, focusing on using his knowledge to create better outcomes for consumers. In 2021, Andrew became co-chair of the Income Protection Task Force alongside Katie Crook-Davis and Joe Miller, in addition to running their own businesses. And during their first year, they refocused how the IPTF works, launched Ziggy's Money Moves aimed at engaging young adults with income protection, and ran the first Income Protection Awareness Week. Now, I know Andrew is really excited and is really busy with planning the second Income Protection Awareness Week, which runs from the 17th to the 21st of October. And hopefully lots of people that are going to be listening are also going to be joining the Income Protection Awareness Week. Andrew, really great to see you and have you join us today.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Good. And finally, it's a warm welcome back to Richard Cately, protection enthusiast and presenter with over 30 years experience and a wide range of senior roles at L&G, including as head of intermediary development before he retired, part-retired, we'll say, in 2021. Richard remains passionate about protection and still has so much knowledge and experience to impart, so I was really pleased to be able to entice him out of the pub or the garden to join us here today. Richard, I couldn't resist the opportunity to hear you witter on again.
Thank you very much, and I've missed my wittering, so greatly appreciate to be invited along with this esteemed panel.
Yeah. And it's great to have all three of you. And I think we're going to have a really, really good conversation. And I'm going to kick off the conversation with a bit of an opening question. You know, we've been talking about today's podcast is very much about income protection, how that is so important for mortgage advisors and their customers. So I'm just going to open with that. Why is income protection such an important product for mortgage advisors to consider when discussing their customers' protection needs? Anybody want to kick me off with that one?
I'll step in. You know me, I like to whittle. But Carla's probably going to say the same thing. I mean, I always found it amazing when I was talking to mortgage advisors that, you know, clients spend so much of their time proving their income so they can afford the mortgage. And as soon as they secure the mortgage that their income has secured for them, they forget about insuring the income. So for me, you know, without an income, you can't have the mortgage and you can't have a lot of other things. So actually, for me, the two go hand in hand. You know, it's a time when we're talking about income to our clients, you know, to try and improve the income. So why not talk to them about insuring that thing, to making sure they stay in it? So for me, that's the key thing. Income is just so crucial to keeping the house. And then why would you not talk about protecting it?
Yep. Well, great starter, Richard. Anything?
Yeah. And just like to add on to that, with, I think as well, from a mortgage advisor's point of view, who might not feel very confident with going into too much detail of protection, or, you know, that part of feeling like you're selling to the client. When a client who's trying to get a mortgage is so, I suppose, they're dependent on the income to let them get the house that they want, to let them get the mortgage. That's the time to make them aware of how important it is, not only to secure the mortgage, but to make sure it's protected. Because at that point, they're probably focusing a lot more on the fact of what they're bringing in, what the bills are going to be going out. And that's the time when they need to understand more than ever that if anything goes wrong, you're not going to be able to do it. And it's got their attention, I think, a lot more than if you tried to go at that, say someone like me trying to explain that to a client who's been in the house for 2 years and they haven't been off sick. You forget how important your income is, and you forget how desperate you were to show that your income mattered and you could afford it. But could you still afford it if you're on the sick? At that point, I think they're the most, I don't want to say vulnerable, but the most aware of how quickly their income can affect what they can get and what they can do with their life. So I think that's the time that it needs to be spoke about by everyone as much as possible.
Yeah. Also, Carla, I guess it's true to say that this could be the first time a client has actually spoken to a professional financial advisor. And a lot of clients don't know they can actually insure their income. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but their income is their biggest asset, which they don't know about because they're so used to insuring things and cars and houses and stuff that they don't even think about it. So actually, the advisor, a mortgage advisor, has a prime opportunity here. Is usually the trigger for anybody seeing a financial advisor first thing is a house. So that for me, for a mortgage advisor, is key for them to actually get into that conversation.
Yeah, they've got like the perfect opportunity. It's the prime time to speak to anybody about insurances, especially with first time buyers. It's opening their eyes to everything they need. Now, if you've got a mortgage advisor who isn't going to go into much detail and isn't going to show the value of the product, then they might not, the next time they get approached to it, if they've already had that first negative, not very, you know, passionate like explanation on the product, they're not going to feel as eager to get it covered. And it's annoying because if the mortgage advisor doesn't want to go into too much detail or doesn't want to go through that, then they could look to giving it to a protection advisor who would. But at that point, that's when the client's going to be the most impressionable.
And Carla, if there's one thing I definitely know, they're going to get a passionate explanation about it from you.
Well, yeah, but not just, I mean, any mortgage advisors who don't want to do it, hit me up on LinkedIn. But I'm sure there's many people who would do it, who do a very good job doing it exactly the same way I would. It's so frustrating because it's not very often I get clients at that point when they're just buying their first home. It's normally when it's a couple of years down the line or that they are just wanting to top up or change. Mortgage advisors have the best opportunity to give them so much information and make it relatable to them. Like, when else is going to be the best time? It's like, for me, the best time to get someone with life insurance would be when they got pregnant or when they were having a baby. That's when they are so interested in what the product can do. When you're getting a mortgage, if your income was so vital for you to attain that mortgage, you need to make sure you're protecting it, because what you're going to do if you can't work, you're not going to be able to pay your mortgage.
And as you say, as you say, if you're trying to persuade somebody 2 years down the line who hasn't experienced the need for it and doesn't, you know, they go, oh, it's fine. It's a lot harder sell potentially than at the outset there. So yeah, I think it's a really good point. And anything you want to add?
Yeah,
to that?
And you get the whole it's my mortgage advisor said I don't need it.
Yeah, I guess for me, I'll be a real person rather than an industry professional on this one, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So I've moved house 2 months ago, right? And got a, you know, this is it. This is our forever home. This is our nice big mortgage and all that. And I am aware I must be a difficult person for a mortgage broker to encounter. But in talking with Caroline, my very good mortgage broker, I guess, it is everything Carla says, right? I am that person. This is, having put my head in the sand for a fair few years about finances, you have to face up to it at this point, and you have to, you know, do all of those. Oh, actually, yeah, this is what the numbers look like. But equally, I guess from her perspective, she was in having conversations around this. She was, you know, you feel great when you help someone get the house of their dreams, but you know, you feel even better, or you risk feeling the positive is you feel even better when in two or five years time you see them and you know you've helped them out when something really bad's happened. And the counter of that, and frankly, she, as I'm sure most mortgage brokers would have of stories both sides of it, you know, the people who come back and they're having to leave their house because things haven't gone so well, and you have to say, well, we did have that conversation But you know, we didn't go far enough. So I think there's a, obviously there's all kind of legal, regulatory, consumer duty angles, but I just think that human angle and keeping that forefront of mind is key to this.
Yeah.
I think what Carla said was so key. You've got to be so keen about it. You've got to make this thing so relevant to the people you're speaking to. If you just go through the motions, people aren't going to buy into it. But you get in front of somebody like Carla and you know you're going to buy into it. And hopefully, you know, somebody like me as well. And Andy, we're just so passionate about that sort of thing. So if you are passionate about your selling and you're not just going through the process of it because you've been told you need to talk about it, you're going to get the client to buy into it. It's just human nature. You tend to follow an enthusiastic conversation that makes it relevant and useful to yourself.
Fabulous. Really good points there, guys. Thank you for those. So if I follow that up and just ask, you know, if we're comparing income protection with other types of protection, so comparing it with things like critical illness cover, and appreciating that, you know, I understand the differences between, and hopefully so does everybody listening to this, but in terms of what do you see as the advantages, disadvantages of IP versus those other types of protection? First of all, from a provider's point of view, as somebody who's advising, what do you find the advantages or disadvantages might be?
Well, obviously the main advantage is that they're covered for a sick note. It covers every eventuality in terms of if it's critical illness cover, you're getting paid based on if your illness is on the critical illness list, which the provider offers. If it's income protection, as long as you've got a sick note and you're unable to go to work and it's not something that's pre-existing, then you're going to have more chance of being paid. Basically, you've got more chance of being paid out and claiming on your income protection than you have on your critical illness cover. But on the flip side of that, you've also got more chance of having exclusions for things that you're more likely to claim on, which is right. Is the only time that I find it frustrating with income protection, because when a client's going through something, the main thing that's concerning them is the thing that they're dealing with at the moment. And if you say you're covered for everything, but you won't be covered for that, it's like, well, that's the thing I'm most likely to be off with. And I'm like, I know, but you're going to be excluded for it. And it's, again, it's trying to make people see through the providers and through what the providers offer that actually there's a whole range of different things that you can be covered for. But income protection will definitely capture, if you're going to go fishing, that's your biggest net that you're going to use is your income protection.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think the thing is, although you said there may be some exclusions there, at least you know what those exclusions are from the outset. It's not like you wait until you try to make a claim and then you find, oh no, I can't claim on that because, you know, it's not one of the illnesses covered, so to speak. So
yeah,
I think for me there are three things that I covered on this particular question. Is one, with life and critical illness, you tend to just cover the debt. So if you've got a £100,000 mortgage, that tends to be the sum assured that you go for. So actually, fine, you can pay your mortgage off if you get one of these conditions or unfortunately die, but you've still got to live. You've still got bills and stuff to pay. So life insurance and KIC tend not to benefit those situations. Income protection for me keeps normality. As I say, if you're only covering the debt, then you've still got to carry on living. So actually income protection grows with you and it can index with inflation, et cetera, which at the moment is really important. So again, the product stays with you. And I think finally for me, it's unique in that it's not just a one-off benefit. Life and critical illness tends to pay out and that's the end of your relationship. Here you could have a relationship with the provider and the support it comes with for the rest of your working life. And for me, the thing that Andrew's operation has done so well, the Income Protection Task Force with the Seven Families campaign, is actually bring that to life with the videos that they've got on there. It shows what support, not only is it financial, but it's trying to get people back to work. It's the psychology, the other support that these policies and providers can give within the product to help those clients. If they can't return to work, it helps with their mental stability. If it can't do that, they've got physio to try and get them back into some form of activity. It can give them support if they're blind, whatever. There's a case manager in most of the cases to do that. Whereas KIC and Life is, there's your money, you know, off you go. And then they got to invest that and try and get an income out of it. Whereas income protection, when I was working at NGI, I used to sing about the praises of Seven Families so much. And it's such a massive campaign, even though it's 7 years old now, but we're refreshing it a bit now. It's brilliant because it's real life.
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Richard. I think, I'm sure Seven Families will come up more as we go through. But I think as you both say, to me, the IPVCI income protection against critical illness, A, it doesn't need to be an either or. There are times where a blend of both absolutely is right for the individual. But ultimately, income protection is it's kind of the just and the true insurance one in my mind, right? Critical illness can be a windfall to you. You know, it can give you all you wanted and more, but equally, as Carl has described, you can fall through the nets of it. Fall through the gaps. And, you know, I've sat on critical illness claims committees in past lives where you have that awful case where, you know, you're looking at it and you're going, well, the policy definitions don't cover that. And you do that. Well, are the Daily Mail going to be running a story on it? Yes, no. Should we pay the claim? Yes, no, etc. For income protection, you genuinely don't, you know, you don't have that complexity of claims. There are complexity of claims, especially around financial issues and things like that, and all of those things. You know, we're not trying to pretend that it's the perfect thing in all cases or that it's not without challenges. But I think that simplicity of, if you're off, this is there to help you, is key. And then, as Richard says, you know, actually, again, quite a simple, understandable, intuitive message for people that, well, it's in both your interest and the insurer's interest to help you get back to work. And so they help do that, right? And, you know, even to the most cynical sort of insurance skeptic, well, that's quite an obvious thing that they would try and do that. And then we've got tons of examples of how and why that works so well, in particular with, you know, the reality of struggling, politely put, struggling probably government services as people wake up to that. So, there's lots in there.
I think the other thing with IP, which I used to love hugely, is, and we talk about it a bit later about the cost of it, but it's the most flexible product that you have regarding making it fit to a client's budget. With life or critical illness, all you can really do to reduce the cost is to reduce sum assured or reduce the term. With IP, you can change the deferred period, you can go for a low start, a low cost, an age costed. You can do all sorts of things with the cost of the contract to make sure that, you know, if the client can't afford the full-blown Rolls-Royce version of it, you know, four-week deferred period, then, okay, make it 26 weeks or 12 weeks or change the way it's costed. Or so there's so many options within income protection, which is why it's quite important, or very important, really, for an advisor to know what they can do with it and talk to the client about the options, because it is such a flexible product.
Yeah, and ideally, like exactly that, the IP's got so many different options in terms of fitting in with the client's affordability. Ideally, with a client, would have both. You'd have the life and critical illness, and you'd have the income protection, because yes, the lump sum's amazing, and if it was round a mortgage, yes, your mortgage is cleared. But especially what's going on, I think, now with rising costs of living, everything else, just because your mortgage is paid off doesn't mean that you're going to be able to survive if you're off sick and you've got your gas, electric, shopping, fuel, children. Really, the perfect combination is that they have everything. But again, it comes back to speaking to an advisor who's willing to put the time and effort into making them understand that and see that, rather than just, you need this and this, they don't want it, okay, fine, you can just have this.
Really interesting. And you know, Richard, you have to a large extent already picked up on my next question, but I'll give you the opportunity if anybody wants to expand on this further. I was just going to ask that question. So how do you overcome that perception of some customers and actually some advisors, and particularly some mortgage advisors, that IP is either expensive or even in some cases, some will believe, and I'm going to say incorrectly, but I accept people have different beliefs, that it's unnecessary. So you made a really good point there about the sheer flexibility of the product, Richard. Does anybody want
to? Yeah, I think that for me, that's the biggest thing. And I think the second one, you hit the nail on the head. It's rarely the client that thinks it's expensive, because most clients don't know they can insure their income. So they don't go to their mortgage advisor, so I don't want that because I know it's expensive. They've never heard of income protection, to be fair, a vast majority of them. So in my conversations when I was training, I had a lot of advisors say, yeah, I tend not to talk about it because it tends to be expensive, doesn't it?
Richard, at our age, it was probably also referred to more as PHI, wasn't it?
PHI, exactly. Yeah, you're showing your age now. That's dreadful. But it's true. And you know, one of the things I used to do at L&G when I do the sales skills masterclass is we used to talk about the costings of it and then take a particular client and take them through all the different options. And the premium would go from like 50 quid a month to 10 quid a month. And they could have cover within those specifics. So if they can't afford 10 quid a month, then really, can they afford the mortgage? So actually, by the advisor knowing what they're doing and giving the options and actually talking about it and not assuming the client doesn't afford, can't afford it, so therefore I'm not going to talk about it. And don't get me wrong, there's some amazing advisors out there, and that's where I got all my sales lines from, that can do this brilliantly. So if you're an advisor and you're not selling IP, but you know an advisor that is, go and talk to them, because they will have some amazing lines. Or go and talk to Carla, she'll tell you how to do it. But it's that skill that they need.
It's just the thing, the main thing is, and I say it all the time and it's so simple, but for me, it's just releasing your own conscience. That's it. Like if I don't tell that client what's available, and like you say, you can either have it from £10 a month or £50 a month, they get given the options and they can make the decision. The problem in the industry is that there's not enough time and effort put into passing your responsibility onto the client. As long as I know, if that client rings me and says this has happened, and I can say hand on heart, well, we did discuss it, we offered this, this and this, you declined all three options because you said you didn't want to, you didn't see the value in it, no, you haven't got anything paid out, that's on their head, not mine. And that's in everything I do, that's what I think, is I don't want any responsibility on my head when this doesn't go right, because I've advised them on what I think's best and I've told them. It's like sort of having that power of knowledge that that's not your decision to keep that. You need to make sure your clients are aware of that. And like you say, if you can, we all know you can put in a comparison, £1,000 a month IP, you can start at £6 and finish at 110. There's a hell of a lot of difference in between. I'm not for 1 second suggesting you go through every single one, but you use your brain, engage your client, and you know, pick the three. This is the best, this is the middle, this is the least, this is the bare minimum you should have, this is where I'd advise that you start considering, this is the absolute full shebang. You know, insurance is all about risk. You reduce it, remove it, or accept it. Which one do you want?
Like that.
Yeah. I don't think I can beat that.
challenge for you. There you go, Andrew.
I think, I think it's, for me, it's always the... Yeah, it almost can't be expensive and unnecessary, right? It's expensive. Yeah. It can be expensive, and I think there's a bit, right, but as insurers are so hard coded to deny everything. I think you have to admit it. This product can look expensive at that first instant, and I think trying to kind of pretend it's not is you know, risks turning advisors off. I think, as Carla and Richard have described, that's how you can change it. But ultimately, it's expensive because it pays and it helps people. You know, it's not expensive because people are making loads of money from this that they're not making from life or critical illness. It's more expensive because it helps more people more often. So then off you go. And yeah, as I say, I can't beat Carla's brilliant answer.
No, I can't either. But it just makes the point there, just thinking about what you were saying, Andrew, is that an indication that perhaps some advisors are simply going straight away to the, you know, Carla described the three different, you know, this is the best, this is the minimum you should start thinking about, this is the cheapest, the least. Do you think in some cases part of the problem is that the advisors are going straight to the, this is the best and this is what it's going to cost you, and not doing enough to help customers realize that actually there is still the options to go. You're better, you know, you are better off with some IP than none at all. And what you need to do is understand what people can afford.
And what I deal with Carla's way of talking is, it's a bit like the Costa argument, isn't it? You know, if we're a herd, we don't want to be seen as buying the really expensive stuff. We don't want to be seen as a cheapskate. So we're actually giving them the middle option. If you go to a Costa or any of the other coffee brands that are available in the marketplace, people tend to go for the medium size, don't they? They go for the middle. Yeah. If they go for the large, they're a pig. If they go for the little one, they're skimping. So you always go for the middle. So Carla said, you know, you can say to them, this is really expensive. If you start at the bottom and go up, it's the old skiing downhill, isn't it? Then they're not, it's really difficult to hit above the ceiling. But if you're coming down, then actually, oh, okay, I'll go for the middle one then. And the middle one maybe.
That's true. 90, honestly, I'd say 90% of clients who I speak to will go for the middle one. Very, very rarely will someone go for the cheapest option. But again, it's like justifying why it is. When I used to sell kitchens, it might not sound relevant, but it's a good way to think of it. So at Howdens, there's the cheap chipboard door that you put in rentals. There's the MDF door and there's the solid oak door. And everyone wants the solid oak door, but they don't want the solid oak door price. So when you sit down with a client, they all look exactly the same. When they're on that door, when they're in the kitchen, the hung, they all look the same, but you know what the difference is, and you know that it's not real oak, it's chipboard. And I used to sit and be like, right, this is chipboard, this is MDF, this is the real deal. That's the price difference. You work out which one you believe is value to you. And they'd always either go for the most expensive or the MDF. They'd never go for the chipboard. And I think a lot of that as well is because when a client knows that you're being honest and you're giving them the options, they feel like they're in control. Whereas if you just go along with a client and say, it's £50, that's the price, you're not giving them anywhere to go other than yes or no. And people need to start looking at it as not this is what your option is, but making sure that they're aware of everything that's available and give them the ability to decide for themselves.
And also for that, Carla, it encourages persistency too. So if the client thinks they're in charge and they've chosen what they want, then they're going to keep it much more than somebody saying, well, I bought that because that's all I was offered. It's a really good sales angle for persistency as well as everything else, because the client's buying it because they want it, not because you told them they had to have it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So moving on. And again, just thinking about, you know, again, a bit of a link to cost here. So we've got a bit of a cost of living crisis at the moment. When I say a bit of a cost of living crisis, if we, you know, we look at the announcements earlier this week or last week about the energy price cap. What impact do you think that current cost of living crisis has either on the need for or the ability of clients to purchase IP? I'm just going to link to something that Richard said earlier. We talked about when he was talking about, you know, he was talking about life and kick. And life and kick, the fact is, they pay the debt only, tend to only pay the debt. Yes, you can have additional cover, you can have family cover, but the tendency is with a mortgage, they will only pay the debt. But now you're looking at energy bills, which in some cases, for some people, are going to be bigger than their mortgages.
So again, yeah, I think it clearly, right, it clearly doesn't reduce the need for income protection. Indeed, it increases the need for income protection. I think that is true. It is also true that, you know, there's increased risks from a medical perspective. We know in times of financial difficulty for the population as a whole, whether that's mental health, whether that's other areas. So kind of purely from an expected claims perspective and therefore, you know, value for money perspective almost, you absolutely should be getting or keeping your income protection at this point. I guess to personalize it a bit, so Richard mentioned Seven Families earlier. Whether or not you're familiar with that from before, what one of the case studies effectively that we had in those examples was a lady called Tracy Clark. I was lucky enough to meet filming for IPOR about a month ago with her guide dog Loki. So she did have an income protection policy but lapsed it just after the last financial crisis when her health was beginning to deteriorate, and in essence she was in a position where she wasn't earning as much as she was before. Had a chat with a financial advisor. Financial advisor sort of said, well, I don't think you should do it, but it's your choice. She made the choice to lapse that IP policy. And, you know, there will be, and as a result, got no claim. IPTF stepped in for a year to help. And she describes that year as both being the best year since she's been as ill as she is, and this kind of almost exquisite torture in seeing what she could have had. So that's not just the financial payments, but it's everything else around it, all the support, etc. And I think, you know, there'll be so many people in that position, whether that's looking at bills seriously for the first time. So I think there's a retention piece as well here. And it just everything that we can, any angle that we can give to people to say this is why it's still more important than ever. And if that's, you know, if Carla's got ideas on anything more insurers can do, or if any of your listeners have ideas on anything more insurers can do to help win that conversation, then I know that every insurer will be desperate to hear it and to provide those extra materials, because, you know, we desperately don't want people to make that same decision Tracy did, walk away and then go, I really wish I hadn't done that in 18 months, 2 years time.
Yeah, like I've had loads of questions recently from providers of, are you seeing a, you know, in terms of cancel policies due to the crisis, and being completely honest, I've had the opposite. I've had clients ringing me saying I need to up my cover, you know, I don't think my income protection is going to cover what it would before now based on this. And it all comes back to, it's so simple and it sounds like it's a trick but it isn't, if your client understands what they have and they see the value in it, they will want to keep it. And I always use that when we moved into our port house, we had to get, you know, like everything fitted, like the Sky, the internet and things. And I can afford to pay for the Sky package. I can afford to pay for the full shebang, sports box and the lot. So my husband's happy as Larry, but I do not see the value or can justify paying £130 for TV. So I pay for Netflix. It's got nothing to do with affordability, to see the value in it. And that's every time I speak to a client, that's this, I use that example, because I'm not here to try and get you to spend as much money as you can or to maximize your affordability. I'm here for you to understand the value in the product and be happy when it comes out the bank every month and know that that's what you pay for to protect yourself and your family. So when it comes to times like what we're going through at the moment where there's a crisis and people are panicking, I don't believe my clients are looking at that thinking that they need to cancel it, because they know what the hell will happen if they do. Because then they're going to be in a very difficult position. And it's finding that comfortability from advisor to client, provider to client, where they're confident to have that conversation with them and make sure that they put time and effort in and knowing their client understands the value in it, not just what it does, but understands the value of what it can do for them.
I don't think it's much different to the pandemic, is it? A lot of advisors shied away from talking to their clients about pandemic, but actually during the pandemic, income became really, really key to it. But it's one of those conversations you had with a lot of people. And I think with the cost of living now, it's exactly the same. You're relying even more on your income, so actually it needs protecting. So again, you can talk about these things in a negative or it's expensive, nobody can afford it, so I'm not going to talk to my clients about it. Or you could say to them, actually, your income's never been more important. That's why people are striking all across the country. Actually, you need to protect that asset that you've got.
Yeah, because your income is now, you know, a much higher percentage of your income is for essentials, you know, as you say, keeping the roof over your head, but also keeping yourselves warm, keeping you and your family fed.
But also, it shouldn't really come into it, really, because if you're doing the job properly, you're selling a client a budget. So actually, when you're talking to them about the mortgage, you say, okay, what's your budget for the mortgage? And I always used to quote a sales line, which was an advisor that used to say to us all the time, this is what I do with my clients. I talk to them and say, okay, we've agreed a budget. Now, of course, that's going to cover your mortgage, your property insurance, your contents insurance, your life and income insurance. So the client wasn't almost given a choice. You've agreed a budget, and I will make sure that that budget can afford all those things. So rather than taking, okay, we've agreed your mortgage, now let's talk about your life insurance and income protection, you're going to find a bit more money. No, he does it all in within a budget. And it depends on people's own sales process, but I quite like that idea, because you take out the argument about I can't afford that. Well, you can, because you said that's what your budget was. I'll go and find you a cheaper lender if that 30 quid is an issue for you. So, and there is also a question, if you can't afford that 30 quid, then can you actually afford the mortgage I'm talking to you about? And maybe we shouldn't be looking at that size of mortgage.
So again, sorry, go on.
No, you carry on, Carl.
I was just saying, there's not a chance that anyone could use that. It's down to affordability, because you can literally swap and change every single part of the insurance to match someone's affordability. It comes down to them understanding the value of it. Yeah. They don't need to feel like they have to have it, or a mortgage broker, in my opinion, shouldn't need to say, well, I know you can afford it. If that's what they're saying to their clients, not doing the job right. Like, it shouldn't be that. If they understand what the product does, they want it. That's literally... it's just the way they're putting it across. And right now, your income is probably one of the only things you have control of at the moment. Everything else is rise and change and down, out of our control, nothing to do with anything we can change. But we control how our income's protected. It's just making sure clients are aware they can actually do that.
I think some really good points there. And I think you're absolutely right in what you say. But I just want to play devil's advocate for a minute. So supposing you've got a client whose mortgage deal, they set up their mortgage, they took out their income protection 2, 3, 5 years ago, their mortgage deal is coming to an end, and they've just discovered that their mortgage payment is going to go up by £100-150 a month. And they've also heard Ofgem's recent announcement, and they were aware that their fuel bill is perhaps going to go up by another £150-200 a month. And therefore their affordability and their whole income position is different to what it was when they took the mortgage out. In that instance, you know, how do you persuade them? You know, if they, you know, I appreciate the point about the passion they've already got for it, but how do you ensure that the first thing that goes isn't the income protection?
Well, really tricky. I'm not a mortgage broker, but surely for me, if it, I would be trying to look at how we can reduce the mortgage payment, whether that be extend the years or do something that fancy to make that come down. I'm not going to pretend I know how to do that, but I know there's ways to reduce the mortgage payment, because you either have nothing, and then if something goes wrong and you're already saying your affordability is down, then how are you going to pay for this new mortgage that's more expensive? If you're walking about with absolutely none of your risk insured, you the position you'd be in would be a hell of a lot worse than you putting a longer term on your mortgage, so that your prices, your monthly payment came down and you could actually afford to protect your family.
And I think it's also the idea of talking about, okay, what else can we reduce? I mean, Carla was talking about, you know, Netflix earlier, not having Sky. I don't have Sky. I have Freeview. I could afford it, but I choose not to have it because I think, you know, there's enough rubbish on the television to watch. So actually, are there other things you could change? Are the clients going to suddenly change their fully comprehensive car insurance to third party? No, then that's probably a better option than reducing or taking away your income protection. You know, are you going to stop insuring your house and the property? Probably not. So why are you just choosing that one? So I think, again, it's as an advisor's point, is to help advise a client as to what they should do. You're a financial advisor. Give them some advice on their finances and say, okay, what else can we do? And as Carla said, you know, reduce the mortgage costs. Go and find another lender. Extend the term. Reduce whatever needs to be done. Look at ways of doing it. Because actually, by stopping a £30 a month or £50 a month income protection policy isn't maybe going to solve all your problems. What you want to do is find a better way of doing it. I'm just about to redo my broadband because I'm paying 80 quid to BT, whereas I can get it down the road for 25 quid. So actually, again, another simple move to make sure that I can afford what I really want to afford. So again, as Carla said, if you've sold it correctly, the client will want to protect that one. So hopefully they'll come to you and say, look, I really want to keep this going. What can I get rid of to make sure that I can still afford it?
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think, again, reminding people what they've actually got. And that can be, you know, that could be sometimes in some advisors' voices, it is the fear, right? It's the, oh, well, if this goes and something bad happens. But actually with IP policies now, there's so much in there today, you know, that whether it's second GP or whether it's GP access, online GP access or support services and the like, that for plenty of customers, I think that can bring it much closer. And whether that's an immediate gain of, well, actually, yeah, it's not just paying for this thing that may or may not happen, but they can begin to see closer advantage, which, you know, frankly is in a world where people are living more week to week, day to day, then I think having some of those instant benefits becomes even more important.
I think there's an interesting argument. I mean, Richard, you spoke about this earlier when we were talking effectively about new mortgage customers, which was, if you can't actually afford to protect what you're doing, can you actually afford the mortgage in the first place? And I'm going to freeze. I've got friends who have put their house on the market in the last 10 days. And the reason they've put their house on the market in the last 10 days is because of cost of living. And because they need, you know, they can't afford to live their life the way they want to live it. And that includes things like protection. Now, I'm not suggesting mortgage advisors should be advising customers to do that. But I do wonder if a number of customers are now going to start thinking about that very scenario. And again, I suppose go back to, you know, if people genuinely having cut every other aspect, having looked at every other aspect of their finances, I suppose one thing we would be saying is, don't stop your income protection. Talk about that as part of the holistic view of what can the client afford now. You know, what can they afford for? There aren't any things they can potentially do with their energy costs, but what can they afford with their other insurances? What can they afford with their TV, Sky packages, etc.? What can they get out of? What can they reduce there? And yes, if they do have to reduce their income protection, but do it, as you said all along, do it with open eyes so they absolutely understand the situation that they're going to be in as a result of that and what cover they will have, what cover they won't have. So, interesting challenge, though, at the moment. So, Carla, as somebody who obviously, and one of the things I see about so many of your posts is how much work you do to shop around for the best IP for your customers. So what sort of methods, what tools do you use to find the best IP for your customers? How do you go about?
We've obviously got our comparison solution builder and go through like that. That gives you like a brief overview of the different types of products and what's best for the client. But like a bit old school, I'll ring every single provider. I'll speak to them. I'll ring the BDMs in terms of affordability when it comes down to, say you've got, say someone fell within affordability, but I knew that for 70 pence more, that other provider might not have an exclusion on something that was 2 years ago, whereas that one does. That's something I would then go back to the client and say, this one's this price, but this one's a little bit more expensive, but it's not going to exclude that. So this, and again, just a lot of advisors would probably say, well, that's silly. Why don't you just make that decision for them? It's not my money. And I'll always be very straight with clients and say, you might want to save that 70 pence a month. That's not up to me. It's sad. But I need them to know that I've done that research and I've put that effort in for all of them. And there's no such thing as a perfect plan. There's no such thing as a perfect policy. But it's what's more suitable to the client. And trying to find them the best deal for the best cover, for the best price is... it's just me being a skinflint, I suppose. Like, I love it. I'd like that done for myself, so I treat them the way I want my own doing.
Gents, I appreciate neither of you are directly involved in sourcing IP at the moment, but is there anything you'd add to that? What is it that makes some protection advisors much more successful than others?
I would agree with Carlo, actually. A lot of the tools do sometimes... quite a lot of the times will lead to a cost-led decision and not the information that the advisor has in their head. That knowledge is power, and you're a professional advisor, therefore that knowledge should be there, and you're the one to try and translate it for your client. But Andrew's Income Protection Task Force website, they have a host of information on there, but I think it's just getting your knowledge up, and that's the best thing. Yeah, there's tools around to help you improve your knowledge, but I think at the end of the day, as Carla said, if you know your products and you know your client, then you can marry the two together.
Yeah, I think.
Or abusing the BDMs as well. Or like, ask some BDM and go, right, I've got this and I've got this. What do you, just tell me again, what do you do? What's your USP? And remind myself, then I'll ring the other one and I'll go, right, okay. So then this one does GP anywhere, this one doesn't. You know, for me, that one being 10 pence more is worth that one. But you've got to know it. So if you don't ask, shy kids getting out. If you don't ask, you don't know.
And actually, if you've got a really good BDM, they will say to you, and I used to say it to my advisor, actually, to be honest, you're probably better going with the Exeter or whoever. If they're a good BDM and they want your loyalty, then that's what they will, a lot of them will do.
Yeah. And I think for me, drawing back on past lives and at the risk of finally getting thrown out of the underwriting union for good, income protection does have more flexibility in underwriting than life and critical illness. There's more stories to tell, even to underwriters, around, well, what happened? Why were they off work? What were the real causes? Was it, was it an argument with a boss? Was it bereavement, etc.? And those things matter. And so you can expect to get more different decisions from insurers for the same medical facts than for life or critical illness. And I think it's using that to your advantage, right? And again, there are plenty of brokers and advisors who are very good at that. But I think being prepared to shop around and genuinely, those who do that would say that they almost approach IP more positively than critical illness, where they're once they speak to one insurer, they know what the rest will say. For IP, you do have those opportunities to personalise it a bit more and tell the story on that side specifically.
It occurs to me, and I know when we talked earlier this year, and we had the protection podcast earlier this year, one of the things we talked about was, can mortgage advisors get the level of expertise and the level of passion for the protection that a specialist protection advisor like Carla can achieve? And I think the answer to that is yes, they can, but they have to absolutely see the protection element of their mortgage advice as important as the mortgage element. And I think that's one of the challenges. And I think one of the things I said sort of all those months ago was, if you don't have that passion and if you're not prepared to put that time into your knowledge and into your development, then please do the right thing and refer your customer from that aspect to a specialist protection advisor such as Carla. I don't know what your experiences are with mortgage specialists and income protection. Is it something that some do particularly well?
I think it's across the market. You get some advisors that do it brilliantly, some that just don't. And it's the way their processes and their business, it's the way they're trained, it's the way they think themselves. If you get a mortgage advisor that's got income protection themselves, they're much more likely to have bought into it, therefore they like it. But you know, the old days, and I'm going back to the old days now, Allied Dunbar, they used to do some fantastic training for the advisor market, and you just don't get that anymore. And that's what I tried to do when I was at L&G, is try and bring back some of that sales skills. And I think, you know, one thing that I think we underrate is the skill of a salesperson. Not to sell the client something they don't want, but just to actually inform and put the client in a more informed position. And if you do that, then you're doing the right thing by your clients. So for me, sales skills is the key to this sort of thing. And actually, you know, having the enthusiasm, which like Carla has, you know, if you understand it, you're gonna see it. And as you say, make it part of the package. A mortgage is not just the debt you're taking on; it's everything else that goes with it.
Yeah, and the main thing with mortgages is that it's transitioning from having a product that a client needs to try and give them a product that they don't necessarily need one or understand. So I think it's very, it's almost changing the whole way that you do things, rather than they're coming to them. It's a very, I hate talking about it as a sales point, but they're not trying to sell them the mortgage. They're saying, hi, can you help me? I need a mortgage. So it's very easy for them to do when it gets sorted, because they've got people that they are wanting their help. Whereas when you're an insurance advisor, it's more like of an uphill battle. Yes, they want insurance, but they don't understand what they need, why they need it, what they want to spend for it. And it's a lot more detailed. The thing I always see with mortgage advisors that have done insurance is it's very generic. It's all the same. Whenever I see someone who's had insurance done by a mortgage advisor, it's usually 100 life, 50 kick and full IP. Like literally you can write it. It's always like set amounts. And you think this is literally every single client this person sees gets that. And that's it.
Yeah, no, really, really good. Guys, I'm conscious we are getting towards the end of today's discussion. It's been really, really interesting. You've had some really good points to make. So I suppose what I'd just like to do before we do wrap up is just to invite you all to just give me your last point. What would be the key messages that you would really love to get over to any mortgage advisor or any other, you know, any protection advisors that are listening to this about the importance and relevance of IP and you know, well, yeah. Carla, I'm conscious.
No, it's all right. It's fine. I've changed it. Don't worry.
Okay. Go ahead. Right. Is there anything, any last points you'd like to make about this? What would your sort of plea be to the industry, so to speak?
If you're not passionate about protection and you don't want to take on the responsibility of making sure that your client's aware of everything that's available, then do the right thing and pass it on to someone who does, because the client deserves more and you as a professional deserve to know that your conscience is clear. Don't do a half a job and don't give them something that you think is important. Let them make the decision based on the information that you give to them. We're in such a position of power, and I think it's not handled the right way a lot of the time. And you see it time and time again that advisors use the provider they like, or advisors go to the easiest one to submit to, or the one that pays the most commission. And that's absolutely disgraceful, because they're coming to you wanting advice and you're meant to give them honest, full advice, and you should treat everyone the way you treat your own grandma. And if that isn't what you can do for your client, then pass it on to someone who can.
Fabulous. Yeah, agree completely with that. Andrew, I'm conscious that earlier today you shared a bit of a link with me, and I just wondered if this would be a great opportunity just to highlight the point you were making with that to our listeners. And it was around a recent press release, I think, around some research that's been done. Do you want to make that point?
Yeah. And I think we've done a remarkably good job of not drowning people in statistics, right, and research and that, because it's too easy to do the 1 in 6 people retire early because of ill health and so on, and then half an hour later I'll emerge from my stats heaven to find you've all gone. But yeah, the research just out this week, so timely, is an updated legal and general deadline to breadline, which in essence goes, which says that for the average family, if their income stopped, they would only have enough savings to survive for 19 days. And that is 19, 1, 9, days. That's gone down from, I think, 24 days when they last did it 2 years ago. And roughly speaking, that's saying the average family has about £2,000 in savings and it costs about £100 to, you know, live each day. Now, that won't be true for, you know, as with any average stat, it won't be true for the next person you meet. But starting it, it's potentially another way of which there are loads out there of starting that conversation at that point to go, look, you know, we're not saying that it's just you. We're not picking on you to have this conversation, but this is true of most people in your street. How different are you? How can we help you be in a different position to that? And I think that's critical to me. And I think genuinely, kind of my last point would just be, I haven't, and you know, I've been around a while, not quite as long as Richard, but I haven't seen insurers working together before like they are around income protection at the moment. And I think genuinely that is a desire, a recognition that not enough people get income protection at the moment. To write it or refer it or signposting stuff Carla talks about is absolutely right. But equally, there are BDMs there primed to get out there and help you. So if you are that person who doesn't have the knowledge but is interested in this, then get in touch with us, with you, with us at the IPTF, with a BDM you know, and I promise you'll have them queuing at your door wanting to help you on that journey. So but just be realistic, I think. Don't do it half-hearted. Come all in, or as Carla says, you know, there's plenty of other great options to do the right thing here.
Fabulous. Thank you for that, Andrew. Richard, any final points from you?
Yeah, I think so. And I'll quote something that came out of the the Deadline to the Breadline research. I'm totally with Andrew because I used to publish that. So it is a great bit of research and it's very independent. But I think the thing that came out of that research is almost not so much the 19 days, but it's the assumption that people have that they can actually survive for 44 days. So their perception versus reality are totally different. And that's what we always try to do with that research, is try and open people's minds and say, actually, you think you can last 44 days, but actually you can only last 19. That's not very long, is it? So again, and that then brings clients into that, making it very real to themselves that they need to do something. But the word I wanted to bring back was an IFA called Neil Bowen, who works for Personal Touch. And he was part of a campaign we did back at L&G about Hero in the Middle. And he said, which I thought was a cracking quote and all advisors should take it, is, it's not for me as your broker to decide whether somebody wants insurance or not. It's for you, i.e. the advisor, to give them the opportunity to tone you down if they don't want it. Let them tone you down, but give them the opportunity to hang on to their house and look after their family in the event of serious illness. And I think that's something that Carla was very much talking about. It's our responsibility to sleep at night. Don't just assume a client can't afford it. Give them the option. If they can't afford it or they don't want it, they'll tell you. But put them in control and let them make the decisions. And then you, as the advisor, can put it in place for them or not, as the case may be.
I think that's a really good summary from all three of you. And I really, really thank you for that. I just want to wrap up with a couple of key points here now. A little reminder to everybody, something I said at the start, Income Protection Awareness Week runs from the 17th to the 21st of October. If you're interested in income protection, you want to know more about it, please take the opportunity to see some of the great sessions that the Income Protection Task Force have put together for this. I saw a lot of the sessions from last year's. I know it was a fantastic week. And I'm sure Andrew and his colleagues have got some really great sessions lined up again this month. So month of September. And similarly, on another education little appeal, just a reminder to those of you that aren't already signed up, the LIBF have our first ever mortgage conference on the 3rd of November. And one of the key focus points is going to be, obviously, being an education body. We are looking very much at education. We're looking at education in mortgage field, in protection, and in equity release. So again, we'll definitely have people there talking about the importance of protection, particularly the importance of income protection. So just a couple of little plugs there I wanted to finish with. Income Protection Awareness Week, 19th to the 23rd of September, LIBF Mortgage Conference, 3rd of November. Great events for all mortgage advisors. Hope to see many of you there. Carla, Richard, Andrew, thank you very, very much for your time today. It's been great to hear from you again. And that passion you've all got is so obvious. I just hope that we've conveyed that successfully to all the listeners. To the listeners, thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to joining you for another episode of the Mortgage Podcast next month. Thanks again. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to find out more about our qualifications, training and upcoming events, then go to libf.ac.uk. We also have other podcast channels that dive into topics like trade finance, financial advice, fintech, and more. You can find all of them at libf.ac.uk/podcasts.